very much. Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining us. My name is Diane Byram with Byram Fisk Communications, and I will be the moderator on today's telepress conference. We wanted to bring together several key leaders in Michigan's agriculture community today to discuss water quality. This is an especially important and timely issue given water quality issues in the western basin of Lake Erie. We're going to hear from agriculture leaders about what the industry has done already on water quality, but we're also going to hear about agriculture's continuing efforts today to be part of the solution. Joining us on the telepresser, we have Jim Byram, President of the Michigan Agribusiness Association, Jim Zook, Executive Director of the Michigan Corn Growers Association, Ken Nobus, President of Michigan Milk Producers, Mary Kilpinski, Executive Director of the Michigan Pork Producers Association, Dr. Tim Boring, Research Director for the Michigan Soybean Promotion Committee. And who just joined our call, please?
This is Jacob with MERS.
Thank you. At the conclusion of each of our speakers' comments, there's going to be a question and answer opportunity. With that, I would like to turn it over to our first speaker, Jim Byram, President of the Michigan Agribusiness Association.
Good morning. First, I'd like to thank everyone for joining the call. This is an especially timely issue, and we want to highlight several issues, both what we've been doing in agriculture to help protect water quality and look forward to some of the things that we anticipate in the future. We all know that there's a variety of factors that affect algae blooms in Lake Erie and other surrounding water bodies across the region, including invasive species in the lakes and waters such as zebra and quagga mussels. Clearly, there's an issue with some poorly performing septic systems. There's an aging infrastructure in municipalities that are resulting some combined sewage overflow issues, and agriculture is also involved. One of the other issues we need to highlight is the impact of climate change and especially severe weather events when we see extreme rainfall that causes difficulties for agriculture and other industries, as well as extreme high temperatures that especially in shallow lakes such as Lake Erie, the western basin of Lake Erie, can pose an extreme problem. We want to highlight some of the things that we've done in our industry, especially in Michigan, to talk about being and to be involved as part of the solution to water quality challenges. First, I want to highlight the fact that the Michigan Agribusiness Association was the lead organization to remove phosphorus from lawn fertilizer several years ago. We recognize that was an important issue. We also were a strong supporter of requirements for NPDES permits for livestock operations, again, to help manage some of those issues related there, too. You'll hear more about that in a little bit from Ken Nobus with the Michigan Milk Producers. We've been very aggressive in promoting precision agricultural activities in Michigan. In fact, we're proud of the record we have in the amount of variable rate fertilizer application and site-specific agriculture that we have in Michigan. And again, you'll hear a little bit more about that from Tim Boring with the Soybean Group and Jim Zook with Michigan Corn Growers. We're strong supporters of the Michigan Agriculture Environmental Assurance Program and also generally accepted agricultural management practices for agriculture. Those are government-sanctioned activities that help maintain water quality and encourage producers to embrace best management practices as well as good environmental stewardship. We also are proud of the fact that we are involved in the groundwater stewardship program that's actually funded with private funds from producers and industry to help fund some of the activities of the MEAP, Michigan Agricultural Environmental Assurance Program, as well as helping farmers install practices that help them reduce the impact on the environment and help maintain water quality. In addition, 5 years ago, we kicked off what we're proud of, the Green Agribusiness Program in our organization, where we recognize businesses, agronomy, retailers, and all other facilities that are members of our association to recognize the kinds of things they do to help, again, maintain environmental quality and maintain water quality across the state. Michigan's very sensitive, obviously, our members are, to water quality being surrounded by the Great Lakes, and we're especially sensitive. In addition, we want to continue to highlight some of the other activities we're embracing. For example, under the Regional Conservation Partnership Program, we're working with the Nature Conservancy and some 40 other partners, including commodity groups and many others, to help embrace conservation practices and encourage more conservation practices be installed by farmers across the state of Michigan. Precision agriculture demonstrations. Today we're announcing 3 meetings across the state, and we'll be happy to provide additional details to you later. But the first is actually this Friday in Lake Odessa, Michigan, just west of Lansing, where we're going to talk about what precision agriculture technology is, how that can help protect water quality, and the kinds of things that we can do to help producers be successful and at the same time optimize fertilizer use. We have additional sessions scheduled in Vassar and Blissfield in the future, and again, we'd be happy to provide that information to you. We're also convening a forum of the Michigan Fertilizer Industry representatives next week to take a look at the kinds of things that we might want to think about for the future, what kinds of ideas we have, again, to help be part of the solution. We've achieved many positive things in the past. We look forward to several new developments and several ideas for the future, but one of the most important, of course, is embracing the Fertilizer Institute's 4R nutrient stewardship strategy, making sure that agronomy retailers and farmers use the right type of fertilizer in the right amount at the right time and in the right place. And as we look at all of these issues coming together, we recognize it's going to take a comprehensive strategy to deal with this important and critical issue, and we in agriculture and agribusiness want to be part of the solution.
Thank you. Now we'll hear from Jim Zook, Executive Director of the Michigan Corn Growers Association. The association is more than 40 years old and has 1,300 corn growers across the state of Michigan. Jim?
Thanks, Diane. I'm Jim Zook, and I work with the corn growers across the state as the Executive Director for the Michigan Corn Growers Association. This is a complex issue, and agriculture will continue to be a part of that solution. We've already done work that we're proud of, and at the same time, we continue looking ahead to the future and asking what else can be done. Water quality is critical for all of us, for our families, for our businesses, and for our way of life. For us here in Michigan, no one lives more than 85 miles from a Great Lake. So we're a bit different here in Michigan, and our growers are focused closely on water quality issues. For example, Michigan is a leader in the use of precision agriculture technology that's important for our corn farmers, as well those who produce other commodity crops. By using satellite technology, GPS-driven farm equipment, and equipment that only applies the seed and fertilizer needed in a specific area, we are able to optimize the fertilizer impacts. Grid soil sampling, for example, is one of the vast majority of producers that they use. This is a process where a grower uses soil samples, often GPS plotted, to understand exactly where they need to place nutrients. After analyzing the results, they're able to optimize their fertilizer use. Decades ago, and even a few years ago, the technology just wasn't where it is today. Growers didn't have the precision ag tools that are in use across the state to pinpoint fertilizer applications. From the environmental and economic point of view, those who are succeeding in the business of growing corn and other commodities have adopted precision agriculture, or they are doing so now. Meanwhile, fertilizer technology has improved. We're using slow-release products and those that can be adjusted based on the needs of a specific area. Our industry has also partnered with state government through the MEAT program, which has enrolled farms across the state. Our corn farmers here in Michigan are a proactive bunch. We want to be ahead of these issues and look to the future. This is a complex issue, but agriculture and the corn industry are part of the solution here in Michigan, because water quality affects everyone. Thanks, Diane.
Next, we'll hear from Ken Noba. Ken is the president of the Michigan Milk Producers Association. MMPA is the 11th largest dairy cooperative in the United States, representing 1,300 farms in Michigan and the surrounding area. Ken is a third-generation dairy producer from the mid-Michigan area. Ken?
Thanks, Diane. I am Ken Nobis, president of the Michigan Milk Producers Association. Michigan's dairy industry recognizes the need to protect water quality for our businesses, families, and communities. Water quality is a personal issue for every dairy farmer and anyone involved in Michigan agriculture. Our kids and grandkids count on healthy, clean water, and their children will do the same. Modern technology has made it easier for producers to manage nutrients and manure on the farm. We continue every day working with our partners to be part of the solution on these issues. Today's dairy producers are key partners in the meat program, for example. Our dairy producers follow Michigan's GAMPs, the Generally Accepted Agricultural Management Practices, that are helping folks manage their manure and safely store products. We supported the requirements for NPDES permits on large dairy operations, as well as enforcement actions by the DEQ to crack down on those who don't follow the rules. We participate in programs with the federal government to inspect containment facilities for safety. And while we've done a great deal to be part of the solution, we're looking ahead to the future as well. For example, more producers today than ever before are incorporating filter strips along drainage ditches. This is an emerging practice in the dairy industry that has real impacts on water quality and is growing in popularity. We're also working with nutritionists in the industry in making changes to the way we formulate feed rations for our dairy cattle. Research has shown us that reductions in the amount of phosphorus and nitrogen in the feed ration could be made without impacting animals' health or production. This is something that we do because it makes environmental sense. Just as we have been proactive in recent years, we intend to continue working with our producers and with experts from across the agriculture industry. It's the right thing to do for our businesses, our communities, and our future. Thanks, Diane.
Thank you, Ken. Now we have Mary Kilpinski, Executive Director of the Michigan Pork Producers Association. Mary?
Thanks, Diane. Like the others joining on the call today, Michigan's pork industry has strived to be proactive and forward-looking on water quality. We have results that we're proud of, and we're part of the solution. This really comes down to modern technology and modern practices. Pork producers are no strangers to challenges, and we are always looking for ways to improve our business. As one part of the solution, we're using manure injection directly into the soil, a modern and environmentally friendly practice. And we're focused on using the latest technology to be sure that we're running environmentally sound operations. For us, protecting water quality is the ethical thing to do. It means healthier animals, more certainty, and a healthier way of life for our families and the environment. We're focused every day on using the latest farming practices to continuously improve our communities and safeguard the land we all live on. While we're working hard to be proactive, we're committed to being part of the solution in the future. Thanks, Diane.
Finally today, we're joined by Dr. Tim Boring. Tim is a soybean producer near Stockbridge and a graduate of Michigan State University, where he received his Ph.D. in crop and soil sciences. Dr. Boring also serves as research director for the Michigan Soybean Association.
Thanks, Diane. Yeah, like Diane mentioned, I farm about 500 acres of corn, soybeans, and wheat in Stockbridge, Michigan. I also spent 15 years at Michigan State as a student and a researcher, a number of those years working in the soil fertility area. So I come about this issue from a couple of different perspectives. I want to start off by recognizing that everyone on the call today outlined being a part of the solution to these water quality issues. Some of them also hit on the important point that all of us depend on clean water, and it's not just for crops and food, but it's also for our families and communities. That's why agricultural industry here in Michigan has been proactive about embracing technology. We're seeking out best management practices, and we're committed to doing the right things for the environment. Soybean producers in particular are specifically working on these. We're key partners on conservation efforts and best management practices, and we're very engaged in precision agriculture efforts. We're working hard with the programs folks on here have outlined today to implement these and make sure that our producers are doing the best job of optimizing fertilizer use. precision ag tools like satellite technology, GPS-driven equipment, slow-release fertilizers, paired up with modern planning and application methods, play a huge role in this process. These have a real impact on water quality today, and we're committed to improving these in the future and continuing to work on how we can best implement these. To close out today's session, I want to note that this is a conversation about solutions. When we look at water quality issues in that western Lake Erie Basin, there are many causes: invasive species, poorly performing septic systems, aging municipal sewer infrastructure, and agriculture. We also need to remember that climate change has made the algal bloom issues in Lake Erie already worse. Extreme weather events leading to increased rainfall, as well as higher temperatures, have a real effect. The impact of climate change threatens to increase water quality issues for all of us moving forward. While agriculture has worked hard to be a part of the solution, we must and we will continue to innovate, adapt, and lead the way into the future. As a grower, you have to manage every day with an eye on the next generation. It's particularly important for me as a fifth-generation producer on my family farm. I can tell you that Michigan soybean growers and the agricultural sector as a whole are really leading the way in this effort and committed to this. And with that, I'll turn it back to you, Diane.
Thank you, Dr. Boring, and I want to thank all of our speakers today. We've heard from a number of key leaders representing Michigan agriculture, and they've made some good points regarding water quality issues. I want to recap their comments and then open it up for a question and answer period. First, we know today that a variety of factors cause water quality issues in Lake Erie and the surrounding area. These include everything from invasive species to malfunctioning septic systems to aging municipal infrastructure, as well as agriculture. We also discussed how climate change is playing a role. Second, we've heard how agriculture is part of the solution on water quality. Michigan agriculture has been proactive, and these leaders outlined how they will continue to be proactive and forward-looking. And last, these folks are experts in their field. We encourage you to contact them with questions and seek out their knowledge on issues. On that note, we will open it up for questions from the press. Please identify yourself by name and media affiliation. First question, please.
Hi, this is Jim Lynch at the Detroit News. Thank you all for the information. I have a quick question that I suppose could go to just about anyone. You all have listed a lot of interesting technologies that would seem to be directed at limiting the amount of phosphorus that comes off these properties. I guess my question is, how many of these things are actually mandatory and how many of them are voluntary practices?
This is Jim Byram of the Michigan Agribusiness Association. Jim, that's an excellent question. And the irony is the vast majority are driven by the private sector to make sure that folks do a good job environmentally and protect water quality. Site-specific agriculture is pursued because it makes sense for producers to optimize fertilizer use. What that means in a nutshell is putting the right amount of fertilizer where it needs to go and not more fertilizer where it doesn't need to go. That's a private sector decision driven both by environmental concern and economics. The MEAT program is a voluntary program that producers engage in, sanctioned by the state of Michigan, but again, it's a participatory program that producers look at the kinds of things they can do, practices they can implement to protect water quality and the environment. The private sector-driven piece of this that's important to recognize is the groundwater stewardship program that actually producers and the industry pay into to help farmers install practices on their farm that may include things like filter strips, waterways, practices like that, again, to help minimize the impact on the environment and maintain water quality.
Jim, does that mean essentially most of these things are, you're saying that the driving factor for most of the farmers in this situation is their own economic interest for this?
Economics are important, but I don't want to minimize the importance farmers play on being good stewards and being a participant in maintaining environmental quality. Certainly, surrounded by the Great Lakes, we're very, very sensitive to that in Michigan. The fact that we have more site-specific or GPS-driven or variable-rate fertilizer application in Michigan as a percent of cropland is very important to recognize. And that's being done, again, not just for economic reasons, but also from the overall desire to protect the environment.
Jim Zook, why don't you talk a little bit about precision agriculture and what that means to corn acres?
Precision agriculture has been really kind of a game changer for our industry. as Jim has done a very good job of explaining the overall function of the global positioning systems that are out there, many of the producers, as these costs have increased, but also because of the sensitivity that we all appreciate our natural environments, that they are only applying the amounts of seeds necessary for the soil's capability, and also then applying the necessary fertilizers to optimize the output of that particular type of soil that they are working with. Again, because Michigan has a variety of different types of soils, each soil has different requirements, and or it also has different production outputs based on some other characteristics that we don't have time to get into today. But the whole idea is that we only are going to apply the necessary fertilizer on that type of soil to maximize or to minimize the environmental impact, but also to maximize the output.
And this has really been a partnership with state regulations, too. And Ken Novus, from a livestock perspective, you want to talk about the NPDES permit?
Sure. Thanks, Diane. So I look at this as being, the question from Jim was, how much of this is mandatory and how much of it is voluntary? Is it just the economic interest of the dairy, of the producer? You know, the NPDES permits are for larger livestock operations. If you have 1,000 animal units, you must get a permit, so it's mandatory. So it kind of sets the rules, the guidelines that other people look to with smaller operations who want to continue to operate without permits. So it's kind of give and take there, I guess is what you'd call it. The larger operations, yes, it's mandatory. But the rules that those mandatory rules then get used by all producers in Michigan so that they come under, they know then, they have a good idea of what they should or should not be doing.
And that folds into GAMS.
And that folds into GAMS because our producers, the other thing that hasn't come to light here, that Michigan's agricultural industry is protected from frivolous lawsuits if they follow generally accepted management practices. If they're not following those practices, which are voluntary, and you do have a manure spill, for example, or a runoff from a field, you are liable for the damages caused. So it's in your best interest, even though it's not mandated, to follow the rules as you go along.
Do we have
another question?
Yes, thank you. Keith Matheny from the Detroit Free Press, acknowledging all of the good things you all say you're doing here. Obviously, we just had an incident that shows that it's not enough, where, you know, 400,000 people plus had their lives disrupted due to this continuing problem in Western Lake Erie. We've heard from the scientists, a lot of them that I've spoken to, that while there are a variety of factors, and certainly the invasive species and climate change are playing a role, agricultural runoff is definitely a key factor here. Would you expect that there are tougher requirements perhaps coming from government or perhaps moving more to the mandate as opposed to voluntary, and why would that be a good thing or a bad thing?
Well, I think it's important to recognize, as you point out, that this This is Jim Byram, Michigan Agribusiness Association. This is clearly going to be a comprehensive solution. It's not going to be one size fits all. It's not going to be an issue that agriculture alone solves. It's not going to be an issue that any one entity is going to be able to address. Certainly, as I've outlined, we're pursuing some additional practices and additional proposals, and we'll be looking at ideas going forward to make sure, again, that we are clearly part of the solution. Nobody wants problems like this. Nobody wants to deal with these kinds of situations. So we want to be ahead of the curve and deal with the problem as best we can. I think it's also important to recognize that we can't predict what government's going to do. We can't predict what may be coming forward from either the federal or state government or elsewhere, but we know what we need to do, and that's why we are going to aggressively pursue action with the Regional Conservation Partnership Program, why we're going to meet next week with our industry to come up with some of our best ideas so we can be ahead of the curve. The point is, we don't want to wait for government action. We want to be able to address it as our own industry to do what's right.
And just to follow up, obviously some of the key tributaries feeding Western Lake Erie are actually in Ohio. How do you coordinate what you're doing with your partners in other states or perhaps even in Canada, since there are so many governmental entities around this problem?
This is Jim Byram again. We are partnering with the Ohio industry on a program to actually install a 4-hour program in agronomy retailers that are part of the entire Western Basin Lake Erie watershed. The Nature Conservancy is leading that charge, along with our agronomy retailers. Agronomy retailers are those businesses that sell fertilizer to farmers. We're working with them closely. What we want to do is make sure that farmers follow the 4 hours that I outlined earlier, right product, right place, right time, those kinds of things. And then, in fact, the irony is that those folks that participate in that program are going to be audited to make sure they participate and that they're actually doing what they say they're doing. That's a program that's in place. In fact, was in place, I want to be very clear, before last weekend to make sure that we do the right thing in the Western Lake Erie Basin and for other water bodies in the region.
And last question from me. There are obviously some political folks who are pretty stirred up about what happened this past weekend who want to take some form of action. What wouldn't agriculture like to see as a reaction? What would be a bad reaction from the government side in terms of your operations and the goals that you all have?
Well, this is Jim Byram again. I think rather than saying what we don't want government to do, I think we need to talk about what we want all involved to try to do, to work together, to be part of the solution. Certainly, agriculture can't be left out of the discussion. We need to be part of it. We need to be at the table. We want to work closely with decision makers and all involved to make sure that we all do the right things. We still have to produce on those good farmlands across the region, but at the same time, we want to make sure we're doing the right things, protect water quality and the environment. We want to be part of the solution.
Hi, this is Michael Gerstein with MERS Newsletter.
Hi, Michael.
Can you explain a little bit just how agricultural runoff contributes to algae blooms? Or someone?
I'm going to give that to Dr. Boring, since he has a PhD in crop and soil sciences from Michigan State University. Dr. Boring?
Well, sure, thanks. There are a number of different issues that cause this, and frankly, they're not all very well understood, despite the fact that we've had decades of work going on in this. And the algal bloom issue isn't new. Ohio, specifically in that Western Lake Erie Basin, has been committed for this with a long time. So you actually have, there's issues with phosphorus in both the dissolved and the particulate phosphorus aspects of how these are moving off of our agricultural fields. Some of it's with surface flow, some of it's with subterranean tile flow. But the issue becomes of there's still a lack of understanding of exactly how these things happen. Implementation of different practices over the number of years that especially in that Western Lake Erie Basin, we've seen a large-scale adoption of no-till, which has wonderful conservation benefits from soil protection, wind erosion, these sorts of things. We're not always very clear on how that intersects with some of the phosphorus management and why that phosphorus is one way or another leaving some of these agricultural fields and getting into those basins. So there's still a lot of aspects on this that aren't terribly well understood, which puts us in a real conundrum of how do you create solutions for something that you don't completely well understand.
Any other questions?
If I could ask a follow-up, I guess. You know, you mentioned all of these other factors. I mean, when looking at all these factors that contribute to an algal bloom, I mean, where would you rank agricultural runoff there? I mean, is it one of the, if you had to have a top three or something like that, is it Is it at the bottom or the top, you know?
Well, I'm not sure it really matters of where it ranks all in there. It's certainly a contributing cause along with all these other things that we're talking about. And I think it's a difficulty, too, in painting a broad brush of how these things occur, that just like we talk about, there's going to be different solutions best implemented in specific situations and specific small watersheds. I think it's difficult to say that all algal blooms are caused by these top three things. We look at unique environments for each of these, and each of these algal blooms are specifically driven by individual temperature events, individual runoff, individual extreme weather, high rainfall events. So I think it's really difficult to say within any sort of particular algal bloom what are the main causes.
Matt, one more time, a comprehensive view. And what we're saying today is agriculture has been proactive. We want to continue to be proactive. We're at the table with solutions.
And this is Ken Nobis. The question about what we do not want to see from government regulations is a knee-jerk reaction, because the phosphorus that caused the algal bloom didn't just happen yesterday. It took a long period of years for it to collect in the Lake Erie Basin, and we have done a lot in just the last 10 years to reduce the amount of phosphorus that is leaving our farms. In the case of dairy, for example, it's just been about 12 years ago that we learned that we didn't have to include as much phosphorus in our ration. The recommendation had been for decades 0.5% of the dry matter intake for the cow every day had to be phosphorus. We've learned that 0.38% is adequate. That's a 25% reduction, nearly a 25% reduction in the amount of phosphorus for feeding animals. When you overfeed any element in that cow's ration, it's excreted. They only need so much to produce a pound of milk. So we've learned that there. We've learned the same thing on the protein side, which is nitrogen. We feed, I think, probably about 15% less protein than what we did a decade ago, because we've learned to balance rations based on the components of protein, not just crude protein. So we've done a lot. The other thing we've done is incorporated a lot of cover crops, which helps keep the nutrients on the farm. That is a practice that is growing exponentially, I believe, in my neighborhood anyway, because the dairy producers see great value in it. And again, they recognize the need to keep the nutrients on the farm. From a standpoint of economics, you can't get past that. But the other thing is we do want to protect the environment. We live in the environment. Our grandkids live in the environment. We want clean, pure water.
Oh, this is Keith Matheny again from the Free Press. If all of these things are sort of the best things to do and the emerging things to do and everyone's happily doing them, why would mandating more of them be a problem in terms of, you know, for the people out there who maybe aren't doing these practices?
Keith, I'm not sure mandating and a requirement to mandate is how we're going to get the quickest adaptation. We believe that working with our industries and working with producers and working internally, quite frankly, will probably make sure that these practices are in place quicker than if we wait for government action, to be really blunt.
And who is that, I'm sorry?
Byram.
Okay.
And this is Mary Kelpinski with Michigan Pork Producers Association, and I think we have to be really careful that we don't, you know, write one rule that's supposed to fit every different type of farmer that there is out there. And even in the swine industry, we have a very diverse group of producers from different types of management practices and different types of operations. So we have to be careful that whatever rules we have out there, everybody can accommodate and work with. So we really want to have input on how we impact the environment and not be dictated.
This is Jim Zook with the Corn Growers. The mandate is not an alternative that we would like to see, because as you've heard today, technology is changing our industry rapidly. And a rule today may not be applicable 2 to 5 years into the future. So what we're doing, we're spending a lot of money within our research dollars to look at what are the best types of cover crops that we can use to fit in the different management styles that our producers have. So with that, we just need to make sure that we keep the door open to be able take advantage of some of these advancements we have in technology. You know, we need to point out the fact that there are a number of factors, again, we need to keep this in mind, that have and probably have a contributing factor to the algal bloom, which, again, is the invasive species, septic systems that are malfunctioning, aging municipal infrastructure, and we know that agriculture is a part of that as well. And, again, we want to be at the table to help those solutions. I think the other fact that we need to also consider is the fact that our corn growers are growing more bushels per acre than they ever have, and they're using less land, there's less water, and less inputs than ever before for that output that we're getting. So we are, again, that'll be even greater in the future, and we want to adapt those new technologies to take advantage of that.
Keith, this is Jim Byram again. I think, in a nutshell, what I'm hearing is that there's a diverse set of production systems out there, and I think it's critical we recognize that a dairy producer is not a pork producer, who's not an egg producer, who's not a crop producer. Those diverse systems are going to take a diverse set of solutions, and I think it's important that we go forward as an industry, which we are pledging to do today, to help be part of that solution. Rather than a single mandated, you must do this, which may not work for Tim Boring in Stockbridge on his farm, might be appropriate for Jim Zook on his, we need to make sure that we tailor those best practices production systems.
And I think Dr. Boring can talk specifically about what the commodity groups are doing in terms of research so that they are on the cutting edge and looking at these kinds of issues and implementing strategies with among their producers.
Well, sure, and this is Tim Boring with the Michigan Soybean Promotion Committee. We do invest a lot into different management practices of how we can do these things, of whether it's doing an increased job of how many seeds we put out per acre, the specific technologies we use to place fertilizers and determine where they need to go. That a number of people on the call today have talked about the private industry and how quickly these advances are coming, that a couple of years ago, drones weren't really an option to go out there and use for remote sensing on the side of a field to make real-time decisions of how much fertilizer is placed in the field, where at in the field, and in what amount. So the ability to harness some of this private innovation, using these commodity resources to go out there and work with the universities, the private sector, different cutting-edge kinds of technologies, that's really how we're going to make strides in this. And it becomes a comprehensive solution. Jim talked about, too, about the ability to tailor and kind of combine these management practices. We talk a lot about there being multiple sources of these issues. There's going to be multiple solutions to this. And so it's not implementing one or two conservation practices to get a better jump on this. It's implementing a suite of practices, and frankly, we're going to be implementing 2-3 years from now practices that we don't even know about right now.
Any other questions?
Hey, this is Jacob with MERS. I had a quick unrelated question here. A lot of the groups on this call have voiced a support for some kind of immigration reform on the federal level for the purpose of, you know, maybe making more access to, you know, migrant labor, which. There's a shortage here in Michigan. The immigration issue has come up in the U.S. Senate race, and I wanted to hear from these groups, with the exception of the corn growers, who they think is the best candidate on these immigration issues related to farming, given that some of their points have come out in recent days.
Jacob, this is Diane, and I'm going to use the power of being the moderator to say we will take that question offline, and I will make available to you their individual contact information, and you can ask that question offline. We're going to talk strictly about water quality. That's what the purpose of this conference is. So thanks for the question, but I am going to punt that question to you making direct contact with the ag leaders that are participating today. So we are approaching 12:10. I would like to bring the Q&A session to a closure. However, I would also indicate that if you contact me, the information and the contact is on your press advisory, we would be more than happy to put you in contact with the appropriate person who participated in this call today to answer your question, provide additional information. At the conclusion of this press conference, we will be sending out a press release. We will also make available additional links for information that would give you more in-depth information on some of these water quality issues. So with that, I want to thank our speakers that have joined us today, Jim Byram with the Michigan Agribusiness Association, Jim Zook with the Michigan Corn Growers Association, Ken Nobis with Michigan Milk Producers, Mary Kilpinski with the Michigan Pork Producers Association, and Dr. Tim Boren with the Michigan Soybean Promotion Committee. Thank you for joining us today. We very much appreciate it, and you have a great rest of your day.